The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I am Werner Herzog, and I am a huge fan of the podcast Rebrand. I love this episode because it is about death, the specter that haunts us all, but it also has laughs, which may be the only antidote to the inexorable march toward our human end. Happy Wednesday!
Rebrand!
Ding!
Hello! Beloved consumers, I'm Ashley Burr.
Okay, I'm Mort Burr.
And welcome to Rebrand, a comedy podcast where we inject new life into tired old brands, whether they be snack food, celebrities, or religious institutions. You're stunned.
Honey, you're keeping it spicy, always surprising with that glorious songbirding.
I gotta keep you on your toesies.
Can we hear it again?
Hello.
God, okay, somebody call Rihanna. And tell her we got a new pop star on our hands.
Does she control the pop stars?
Yeah, my awareness of pop culture ends in 2007.
That's right. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. What have you missed on then? What was the last big controversy in 2007? I'll look it up.
I'm still freaking out about
the nip slip at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, totally. And I can't believe Kanye took that thing from Taylor. You know. And that's the worst I think he's done. So I'm living in a pretty
You're living in a pretty
enviable,
a charmed
world.
Life.
Yeah, totally.
Honey, would you like to introduce our guest?
Oh, I'm so excited. So our guest is an author and a poet. Her most recent book is called Descent, A Guide to the Underworld, and she was published in the Best American Poets of 2009. And she happens to be my sister, possibly my favorite credit of hers. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Maude Kelly.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thanks for joining us. I suppose you're also my sister, but not by blood, by marriage.
Oh, that's a great way to have a sister, honestly.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have all that baggage. I didn't steal your things or you didn't steal my things growing up. You know what I mean? We didn't have a lot of fights that we have.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet, right. We have all that ahead of us.
That's right.
We'll just be stealing and swearing.
I feel like it'll be less cute and forgivable when I thieve from you in our adult states, but...
I'm just picturing Ashley walking out of our guest room where she's got all of your makeup in her hands and she looks confused and scared as to why she's stealing all of your stuff.
And I guess I just tell, like, Mort on you instead of our parents since we don't have collective parents.
Yeah, get really confusing family dynamics going.
I'm like, I don't know, figure it out.
You're both grown women?
You saying my name out loud reminds me of my most recent joke about our names. My older sister's name is Maude. My name is Mort. It was tough for us, but not nearly as hard as everything was on my younger brother, Brace Face Fat Tits Burke.
Our names are actually perfect for this episode because your name, of course, means
death.
And mine means like sadness. Maudlin,
it's just Maudlin.
Like, I didn't.
Yeah, or actually Maudire, which is the French, means cursed.
Whoa.
So, I know.
We're rebranding death.
Long overdue, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. She's been eating rebrand since time immemorial.
Yeah. Since Rome, I think.
Not before Rome.
No, people had a pretty good handle on it before Westernization.
So, Monty, what do you feel is the current brand of death?
I think we really just got to stick with, I was just thinking about this, and a lot of different places have a lot of different relationships with death, and I ain't from none of them. I grew up listening to, the Coug, John Cougar Mellencamp, but literally when he was still just called the Coug. So
I didn't know he was ever called the Coug.
He was. Don't let him forget it.
I still call him the Coug. I mention it daily.
But like, he was our greatest philosopher, you know what I mean? And he didn't really deal with the topic too much. So I'm just going to have to really just stick to American, like, I guess the portion of the branding where we assess like where it is already. And I think that Americans are mostly just scared to death of it and they hate it. They just brand it as like a thing that lives in the very, very back of your closet that you're just like, you don't ever want to go near it.
Yes, I think that's
accurate. It. Full stop.
To the point also where I think people are actively trying to defy death. There's that one guy, I need to look up his name.
Oh, hilariously. Yeah.
Isn't he trying to inject his son's blood into his own bloodstream?
Yeah, yeah. I like to say that he's eating his son's blood in an attempt to become immortal. We probably don't have to get into it, but a lot of the hubris that comes from making billions of dollars needs somewhere to go, and the only thing that they feel that they haven't conquered yet is death, so that's what they're moving towards.
Oh, wait. Newsflash, honey. Biohacker trying to live forever reveals he stopped injecting his son's blood for something more extreme. What's more extreme than injecting your own son's blood?
Yeah, getting a full skin transplant or something.
Oh, total plasma exchange. He's going for the plasma now.
Nice.
Why is his son just must be horribly abused. Why is he consenting to this?
Yeah, no, I can't believe we're letting it happen as a society.
The tech millionaire shared the steps he was taking, saying, 1, take out all the blood. 2, separate plasma from blood. 3,
yes, that's called harvesting.
Replace plasma with 5% albumin and IVIG.
I think you should replace it with Frost Gatorade.
He should replace it with Arby's sauce.
yeah. A little bit of horsey and a little bit of Arby's.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he'd sweat. He'd just smell like a big Montana burger.
Yeah, medium Taco Bell taco sauce.
Yeah, you smell like a Crunchwrap Supreme after you jog.
Delicious.
Yeah, so I think that's all evidence to me. We learn from stories whether we like it or not. And all the stories we tell in America, death is the worst possible thing that could ever happen to you. And we're all going to experience it. Mm-hmm. So the best thing we could possibly do is just deny that it exists or pretend that we can beat it somehow.
Right. Yeah. I think, that seems to be the two paths that at least Americans are taking. Either suppress it deeply or believe that we can somehow thwart it.
Yep.
Which is honestly a level of hubris that I find... You gotta be a little impressed by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a way.
Oh, no, it is impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, to never even have considered what the story Frankenstein means. You know what I mean? Or what the metaphor of a vampire is actually saying about our daily life. You know?
This is the thing I've realized as a writer, is that metaphors don't really work. I think that's what I've learned. Like, I just saw a video of someone saying, because the most recent season of Andor came out, and apparently someone was like, I just had someone tell me, after watching Andor season 2, I can't get behind what the Empire is doing anymore. Now you can't?
Right.
A New Hope came out in the 70s. They blew up a whole planet in that one.
There's something about these stormtroopers I'm starting to not like.
Yeah, what? The Nazi uniforms didn't tip you guys off? What's happening here?
Is this Darth Vader guy not cool?
So anyway, I'm a little bit, I'm feeling like maybe the more overt, the better for our current day and age.
Well, metaphors don't work for everyone. You know what I mean? That person on Twitter is not necessarily representative of the majority of people who've seen Star Wars. I think you're right that people project their own shit onto stuff. So everyone feels like Luke and Han.
Yes, regardless of what they are doing, what their political values are, what they believe in. Yeah,
that's the whole thing, is that white people have really learned how to embody this idea of the rebel, despite the fact that they are the majority.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the current brand of death. It's just fear and avoidance, right? Or conquering. But you say Western, so I'm curious, do you feel like other societies have different brands of death than we do?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people feel a lot more comfortable with it. And then of course, throughout time, people have felt a lot more comfortable with it than we have here. So I think that the most important thing is to just think about it a lot and delight in it. The more you think about something, because I think that's the thing, is like most places have a very nuanced kind of understanding of it, right? And complex understanding of it. And they approach it in all kinds of different ways. Obviously, big ceremonies, little ceremonies, wailing and moaning and gnashing of teeth. I mean, all kinds of things. They have, I think, all of the different approaches. But I think the big thing is that it's just an acceptance from the get-go that it's going to happen. I mean, I actually just think that we haven't had enough. This is going to sound so crazy. We just, most people haven't experienced death enough in our culture, you know? Mm-hmm. To be honest, we have our moms from a family of five and our dads from a family of six, and everyone's in their 70s. No siblings have died.
Right.
Yeah. That's kind of, I mean, that's unheard of. Like, when in the history of anything has that happened, you know?
Right.
I don't think really ever. And I think that it's kind of, I mean, you can just see it. Like, I was at dinner with an older uncle a couple of months ago, and he was talking about his friend who was had just been told that, you know, he had an illness that couldn't be cured and he was going to die. And he was feeling really freaked out about it and really just like really sad and really freaked out and like really just like couldn't get his head around it. And I was like, well, how old is he? And my uncle was like, our uncle's like, oh, he's 84. And I was like, well, you know what?
You
should have thought about it. Like, I'm sorry. Do you know what I mean? Like, what has he been doing?
Right.
Yeah. Well, again, in his defense, like, all his whole life, like, it's been way more important to get his driver's license renewed than to consider what the reality of death means. You know what I mean? So we have all this stuff. And I agree with you about the thinking of it about it more. I think that's true. And I certainly think exposure is really important also. And we don't do that. Like, there are cultures that they put the body in the town square. People come and see the reality of this person now being gone. They wash the body of those that have died. We embalm them. So, like, we were talking about, we could put fake eyelashes on them and make them look like Tammy Faye Baker, another modern reference.
Yeah, very modern, yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think for me, thinking about it isn't good necessarily unless I've changed my framework around it. Because I had this really, really intense fear of death for a long time. And then the first thing that spoke to me was Thich Nhat Hanh, that Buddhist leader, RIP, one of my favorite spiritual dudes. And he said, there is a cloud and then the cloud is gone and it's rain. And then the rain is the lake and then the lake is the cloud again. And when you understand that, you understand death. And so to me, that speaks to this reality of, like, it's actually extremely natural and everything is in the process of it as much as they are in the process of living at the same time. So I'm already experiencing a version of it right now in a way. I'm already older than I was. I have relationships that have died. All these sort of like, all these metaphors really that are like leading to the big reality of the moment that I actually go.
You know, I'm going to say something that, wow, you're really looking at me, honey.
Yeah, I really want to hear what you have to say.
He really leaned in. Wow. This is not like a cool, evolved, like mature modern lady way to think of death. But sometimes I'm like, okay, it's a single moment, right? And maybe the last moment that you're on earth, you'll be terrified.
Yeah.
But there is a part of me that's like, how important is it to prepare for? I mean, you probably don't want your last moment on earth to be like, go, no, no, no. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's funny to think about preparing for something, preparing your whole life for something that in reality might just be a moment. Although I suppose it doesn't necessarily mean that if you have an illness or something and you're seeing it coming very, very slowly, like someone walking towards you in a horror movie. But there is, I think probably this part of me that's scared to think about death when I think like, I need to make more peace with my death. That voice comes in and is like, yeah, but it's going to be like a second. You're going to be like, no, and then it's going to be over.
I think that's also true.
But I don't actually know.
Well, I think it's like preparing for it in the way that you would prepare for a trip to Greece. Which is like having a vague understanding. Like, you don't go to Greece with no preparation. You like bring your bags, you like figure out your itinerary, you understand where you're staying, stuff like that. So for me, I like listening to people who've had near-death experiences. I like listening to the things that the different spiritual tenets say about it so that I have a great understanding of the wisdom around it. But I think you're absolutely right. I'm not like obsessing over the moment that I die necessarily.
Right.
But
right. There's
a lot of people that have, like, the Buddhists have incredible things to say about the moment of death.
Like what?
Well, There's a thing around Buddhist psychology that is the karma that relates to your dying, like what specifically happens the day that you die. There's the karma of like your thought life for your entire life. There's the karma around that day. So like what happened to you that day is going to affect the way that you died. There's like two or three more different kinds of things. Because like you're saying, it's like, it's just a moment. It's going to be like any other day in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're continually aware of the way that your thought processes are affecting your life today, when you die, it's not going to be...
It'll be chill.
It'll be so fucking mellow. I'm going to throw up the deuces. I'm going to piece everybody out.
You're gonna throw up double deuces, and you'll cross them over your chest.
Yeah,
eh,
stick my tongue out.
Yeah, a croak
like Miley Cyrus.
You'll do a selfie at the moment of death.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan. Yeah.
Well, actually, can I ask you a follow up question,
please?
So, because I do think that's really interesting, and I do think when people, there are a lot of things that people are afraid of, and one of them is like, dying, like it's gonna hurt, or it's gonna be scary, or it's gonna be terrible. So that's kind of like thing one, which it sounds like you're not maybe that afraid of that. Is that right?
Well, I do think I think there is some trepidation or some fear around the fear of it, of like knowing it's coming and being like, I'm not ready.
Mm. Yeah.
I think I'm recalling some sort of story that I think you told me once where someone's mom was dying and she was like, and who can blame her? But she was not having a great time. deeply not ready to go.
Yeah.
And was like, you know, fingernails clawing at the floorboards, trying not to go.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me is like, I want to be that. And then another part of me is like, if I am that, it's going to be a finite thing anyway.
Mm.
I mean, it really becomes the thing of like, do the final moments of my life even really matter? I guess they impact whoever's around. If I'm freaking the fuck out, I might really bug whoever is at my bedside out.
Oh, God, that's so great. I love the codependency.
If you're begging God to take me and the doctor instead of you.
Look, he's probably a dick. Take him.
I'll do anything.
I'll kill him myself.
Just for one more day, I'll murder my husband. So, okay, so it's that. So you are a little bit afraid of...
Yeah, I'm afraid of going into the great beyond, like, fucking screaming, being like, no!
Yeah, that's the worst way to go.
But it's kind of like when you go down, like, I don't know, have you ever been on like, one of those really big, scary water slides? You know what I mean?
Right.
So scared right before you go, and then you're like, ah! But then it's kind of fun, so I think maybe... Right.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't really, like, to your point, does it matter too much? Maybe not.
Yeah.
Right. That's the
you're
sort of
go
thing
how you're going to go. And I like the idea that it's finite. Yeah.
It's not going to last forever. I have this thing. I relate to the, like, not ready to go to me could translate like I have more to do or something. Mm. I'm having this experience now that I'm middle-aged. I have less energy. So I now am, I'm like right at the top of the plateau where I'll start heading down at some point. And so like, I think it's beautiful that I have less and less energy in this physical world, which allows me to like slowly, steadily, decline until I am actually ready to go, which is kind of a natural way to do things. But I think in America, you have no value unless you're able to produce.
Right.
So the fact that we are like getting less and less energy, even though that's a natural process, we think, well, I should probably eat my son's blood.
So plasma, honey, plasma.
Sorry, I apologize. Yeah.
It's evolved. The horror has evolved. You know something that... It's funny, too, because, my grandparents on my dad's side, both born in Texas, I think that, you know, my grandpa was a pretty intelligent dude. My grandma was, like, a classic, like, Southern grandma, like, bless your heart, all that kind of thing. And what was interesting about them is that they always talked about dying, even around us, which I was, like... As a kid, being like, why do I talk about death? Why do I talk about being dead so much? Like, I was all like, all right, Jesus Christ, Grammy B, like, you know?
Yeah.
But in a way, and in reflection, I'm like, that's kind of great that they sort of treated it quite casually. They're like, well, when we're dead, like, da 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 da. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, well, when we, you know, move out of this house, you guys will have to blah, blah, blah. But really, it was like, well, when we're 6 feet under.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
It could be my grandpa had Crohn's.
Mm.
And, it got more complicated. That's what ended up killing him. And he was in and out of the hospital a bunch. So there's also a thing, I think, of him being like, all right. You know what I mean? He kind of was like, at a certain point, like, I can already not eat a bunch of different types of things because I have this disease and, you know, da-da-da. So I think he was, I don't know. He did not strike me as someone that was, like, raging against the dying of the light.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. And I do wonder if part of that was because, to Maude's point, they talked about it all the time.
Well, then, okay, so then my other question, I think it's kind of like a three-part thing, like, afraid of the moment of death, which you were kind of talking about, and then afraid of just, like, not existing, right? Like, in this world, like, my impact and my, whatever, achievements and all of my, all the things that I do, like, to not be here doing that anymore is scary. Right?
Yeah.
And then I guess the third one to me is just like the after, like what happens after.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Hold on 1 second.
Ooh, he's been wanting to do that for...
I'm cracking a sparkly.
So I guess, are you afraid of not existing?
I don't know that I am afraid of not existing. Because I won't exist. I mean, I know that's like a very, a sort of silly... Okay, so I'm reading this book. I swear to God, this will be relevant. I'm reading this book called Children of Time. Shout out to Yuli, who I don't think listens to this podcast, but shout out to him anyway. He recommended it.
Side note, one funny thing about Children of Time is that every time you tell me something about it, it's always about spiders. I'm like, this should be called Spiders of Time.
I'm about to talk about these spiders,
yeah,
by the way.
Great.
Well, it alternates between...
It better be children.
What?
It better alternate between spiders and children.
It doesn't.
God damn it! Does it have anything to do with time? Is there any?
I mean, there's something to do with time.
All right.
But basically the premise is this sort of egomaniac woman named Dr. Avarna Kern, I think is her name. Basically, like, they found, the humans have gone to the stars. We figured out how to terraform different planets. We terraformed this one particular planet that she basically wants to put a bunch of monkeys on. They've engineered a virus that will make them evolve very, very quickly. And then she's going to, like, study them and, you know, probably try to become their god or some shit. Anyway, that goes wrong. The monkeys explode. Sorry, monkeys. But the virus ends up on the planet and there is some life already there. And so it attaches to the spiders.
And
so the spiders then end up rapidly evolving the way that the monkeys were meant to, and they form societies and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. See, once again, an author trying to communicate to us that playing God is not a great idea.
So there's this interesting thing where, like, the satellite that houses egomaniac doctor's body, and she's gone kind of insane because it's been, you know, however many millions of years, is in orbit around this planet. And it's sending out these, like, mathematical computations that are basically like an intelligence test for what were supposed to be her monkeys. And the spiders, they've received those messages from the satellite. And it's this interesting thing where there is like a spiritual, I don't know, ritual or sort of construct that they've made around the messages they're receiving from the satellite, but it's not the same thing as, like, they think the satellite is God and they're worshiping it. Right. They're just like, it, because this thing exists and we don't understand it, then there must be more beyond our understanding.
Yeah.
And that, strangely, has been the most meaningful representation of, like, life after death or spirituality or God or whatever that I've been able to, like, kind of vibe with. As someone that I am trying to, like, figure out what my spiritual life is, but that to me was just sort of like, oh, that's really interesting. Because you can then, of course, extrapolate out, which is like, you know, I think I showed you that video of someone say, the sort of metaphor that they use of, like, a fetus thinking there's nothing outside of the womb. Like, it's no, you leave the womb and then you're dead. That's all that it is. And you actually don't know or whatever. So long-winded way of saying, I don't know what happens after. I'm more and more open to the idea of not, I think when I was younger, I was like, well, there's nothing. And I, for some reason, was like, that is like the cool girl thing to believe, is that there's just nothing. And that's what I believe, because that's what a cool girl believes.
Very goth.
Very goth. But I don't know. I don't even know what form that would take. But the idea that I feel like the idea that there would be a consciousness of me that could be bummed that I'm not on Earth anymore would be a weird thing to happen after death. Maybe.
No, totally. That makes perfect sense.
Aw, shucks.
Aw, come on. You know what I mean? It's sort of funny, like... I mean, I guess it's possible. I don't fucking know. But it would just be... It'd just be a weird thing for it to be like, we're just bummed that we're not alive anymore.
Yeah. I really sort of... I think it's like a dream. I think we get there and we're... You know, I think it's taking off a too tight shoe and we shed our painfully dense and too tight bodies, which I feel uncomfortable in a lot.
All the time.
All the time. We're very sensitive to material on shirts and
shit. How sensitive?
Everything's so loud and people are so weird, you know? And that's, I think it's going to be easier. And I think it's going to, that's my feelings. I'm going to be like, that was so weird that I had to get groceries once a week for 68 years. I'm going to live to exactly 68.
Honey, don't say it. That's too soon.
That's like some spiritual people's point is that like it does disappear like a dream. Like all my memories I have of living in Chicago, those are gone right now in the same way that, you know, the dream I had, a weird dream about a sleepover with a bunch of my like teenage friends last night. Mm-hmm. That's also gone in the same way, you know? Mm-hmm. So we want to attach so much solidity to these things, but they actually disappear like smoke, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned dreams because I think that that's something that goes hand in hand with death. And it's also something that traditionally in American culture, we don't really talk about all that much.
Dreams. Despite the fact that every night I put my head on a pillow, I hallucinate a movie, and I wake up and go to work, and we're not all like, hey, that was fucking crazy what happened last night. You know what I mean?
But they're the same. The idea that dreams are a portal, death is a portal. And strip malls, I think, increasingly are becoming portals. The actual, you know... retail spaces are being emptied out and they're just becoming these like liminal scapes. So I do think we're getting there. We will get there as our own empire dies and we are faced with collective cultural colonial death. We're going to get there. So it's all fine. You know, it's like we're... I think it's okay.
You're saying as the American landscape becomes more strange and dreamlike...
Yeah, and I think as the dream of endless conquering of America and endless land, you know, which we've had, right? By we, I mean white Europeans who came here literally in search of gold, El Dorado, you know, is what they called it, and the literal fountain of youth. A lot of people were coming here trying to find that. And then I think we just kind of have maintained this ego-driven, conquering situation for, you know, however long, since the 1600s or the 1400s, I guess. Anyway, it's had a good long run, but we've pretty much destroyed it. And that's great to be at the end because death is important. Which kind of gets back to what I was saying before. And like when you don't have death, then I think the ego forces this endless eating and destruction until death comes. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good clip for our comedy podcast, I think.
This is all to say that like, I think we should approach death in our own American way, which I think by its nature is going to be kind of absurd and over the top. And funny, and that's going to lead us to our, you know, back to wherever it is, to the spiritual places that you're talking about, Morton.
Right. What's the American rebrand of death? I mean, probably if we did it, it would be like taking a terminally ill person and like shooting them out of a cannon. You know what I mean? It'd be like 4th of July and all the people in the like hospice would just get attached to fireworks and explode. That's how America would do it, I feel like.
I mean, we guess we kind of do that now because people kind of like say what they want you to do at their funeral. So I think maybe we could take that idea, but have it like sometime before your funeral when you're still here, but it's like a celebration of not just your life, but your death.
Yeah, somehow. I'm not sure actually why we don't do funerals when the person is still alive. It could be nice to have, I mean, obviously some deaths are unexpected, so that's why. But if you know you're going to die, either from illness or age or whatever it happens to be, it could be nice to have like the funeral so you can be present and you can have people tell you you're great to your face. And then, you know, someone can give you the long kiss goodnight in whatever chemical form you so desire, and you can just drift away. There's something kind of sweet about that.
Oh, I think it's great. And the ability to like plan your own would be really fun. I think it should be, assuming you don't die early, you should do it in an age where you still can kind of enjoy it. Let's say like late 50s, early 60s. You have enough life to know what you've done, right? But then also you still have enough energy to enjoy it. I would want go-kart racetrack. And I want Alan Alda to speak very glowingly about me.
He might be dead.
Fuck! The old man?
I believe so.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, he would definitely be dead by the time that this would be happening.
All right, I'll change it to E-40 then. West Coast rapper E-40, I think I would like to do my eulogy.
Oh no, he's still alive.
I thought so. Yeah, okay, I want Alda up there.
I just don't think he's going to make it to be able to do that for you.
Maybe, but honey, this is Rebrand. We get to use the power of our imagination.
Sure, sure.
Oh, that's
so
good.
Why are you doing it so early?
Because I still want to be able to enjoy it. I feel like...
don't think 70 you'll be able to
go
kart?
Yeah, sure. 70 maybe. But even then, I feel like you're creeping towards too exhausted.
See, I kind of think it should happen every year. Like you have a birthday, which you guys just did the rebrand of.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you should get a death day too.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, totally.
Where you just like kind of lean into it and other people lean into it too.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, you'd have one day where you could just get everybody to talk about how sad they're going to be when you're gone.
Yeah. And really feel it. Like that's part, you're required to really go through the emotional processing of how sad you're going to be when I'm not here.
Yeah. I think it'd be good for everybody.
Totally.
I do think that, I wonder if it should be every year or if it should be like every 5 or something. Because I feel like if you do it every year, at a certain point, people are going to be like, just fucking die. Just do it already. Yeah. Like, I'm tired of talking to you about.
I already told you our favorite memory once a year for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I'm going to need you to just kick the bucket at this point.
I think there should also be an open space where you can like express any grievances or any apologies that you need to make. You know what I mean? Stuff that's gone like unaddressed, you know?
I mean, it's kind of almost like a, in case you die this year.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, let's do it. Yeah, it is like, maybe it's like a mini funeral.
Right.
A funeral. It's a funeral.
It's a fun. It's a funeral. Exactly right. Right. At the beginning of the year, it's like, in case I croak, not saying I will, but in case I croak.
Yeah.
So-and-so gets this Lego set that I haven't built yet. So-and-so gets blah, blah, blah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But maybe, like, because we all know so many people, maybe it's one day. Maybe it's not, like, one day per person. But there's, like, I don't know, 10 people. It's, like, whoever's born that month or something. So all the October birthdays
together.
And you have your funeral.
We could do it generationally so we could help these boomers prepare for dying.
Sure.
I think they really need it. They are not prepared.
Nope.
No, I don't think so. Mm-mm. Well,
and I understand. I'm not giving them a hard time about it. I mean, you know, I had to face my death at like 36. So I should say that is also why I seem to have a cavalier attitude about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't want to give anyone a hard time for not having faced it. Because I would not have if I hadn't had to.
For sure.
You know,
yeah, do you want to talk about that, Mon? The cancer experience?
Well, I mean, I was 36. I had a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I was teaching a lot of adjunct classes at colleges, a lot of creative writing classes. I was writing magazine articles, and I was a poet. And I had had some concerns because I had kind of some lumps in my tummy, and I was kind of worried about it. I had a doctor's appointment scheduled, and like a week before that, I got a call saying that you mentioned this in the beginning, Mort, that I had a poem that had been selected for Best American Poetry of 2009. And I immediately was like, oh shit, that's really bad news, because that means I'm for sure going to have cancer.
Oh, really? No. Wow.
Yeah.
And that the
magical
thinking was correct.
It was, unfortunately.
Fuck.
Oh, damn.
I don't think it usually is. Don't worry. But anyway, I think I probably just kind of knew that something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, so anyway, it turns out I had stage 3 ovarian cancer. I got really intense chemotherapy, surgery, the whole kit and caboodle. And yeah, it was pretty rough. I found out just in the last couple of years that the oncologist took my husband, Steve, aside and said that he should prepare.
Wow.
For my death, because I probably wasn't going to be there. And he was probably going to have to raise these 2 children on his own.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll say, when I came and saw you in the hospital too, like, you'd lost so much weight. It was the chemo too, of course. You know, you looked so sick that seeing a loved one like that did feel like there was something about it that was like, it was like getting a deeper look at death than I ever had before.
Yeah, I bet.
There was part of me, I think, that sort of, did sense that. Like we were talking about recently, like it was touch and go and it felt like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
This is maybe a weird question, but how was it for
you,
Maude? Like, did you feel like you were making peace with that possibility? Or is it a situation where, like, you can't really do that because you need to fight and your body needs to feel like it needs to fight? Or?
Yeah, I was definitely not going gentle into that good night. Mostly because I had 2 little kids.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to have a friend who has a really connected, spiritually, psychic doesn't even quite do it. But they told him that I was going to be okay. So I just hung on to that. Mm. And I also was just, I did have to face it. And I think that really happened mostly just from being really close to death physically, almost understanding the feeling of it. Mm. Because, like, for example, I had a collapsed lung. This one night I was in the hospital and I couldn't move for like 10 hours straight.
Wow.
But I also, like my brother Mort, famously, I'm a terrible insomniac. And so even though they gave me 2 Ambien, I didn't sleep.
Wow.
So it was very strange. It was very coffin-like. And I actually had a phone and I could move 1 finger. And so I just played my favorite Indian rag, which is like a very long, melodious piece of music by this incredible Indian classical musician named Kishori Amonkar. She has a very ethereal voice. And basically, I just listened to her over and over, just intoning the most ancient, felt like to me, she was very contemporary as well, messages from the beyond. And I did feel like I transcended my body in this plane. And I just felt so held and loved. And it wasn't a near-death experience because I didn't leave my body, but it was just the creation of peace within me and the understanding in a deep felt sense that I have an eternal soul and that suffering is temporary. Kind of like you were saying, Ashley, like it's finite. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then I did have just 2 years of absolute fear that it would come back because I was okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it did come back a couple times. But the good thing about facing it in that way for so long is that I really did burn through the fear. And now I'm not afraid.
Hmm.
That would have been a completely different story if you would have played Party in the USA.
So good.
Hands out, you're playing my song, butterflies fly away. I don't know if you've, have you read Grace and Grit? Have you heard of that book or read it?
No.
I'm forgetting the name of the author, but he's a philosopher who met this woman, fell very deeply in love with her. They got married, and then she was diagnosed with an advanced form of cancer. And it's a combination of his reflections as her caretaker during that time and also journals that she wrote while she was going through the process of trying to cure her cancer. Yeah, what your story reminds me of, it does seem like, because she gets increasingly worse and she ends up dying, but she seems to also reach a similar place that you described before her death, brought by the revelatory stylings of Miley Cyrus. But yeah, I think that is,
and sometimes Robin Thicke.
But she's also a very spiritual
person. Billie Eilish.
Yeah, Billie.
Right. Charlie XCX. There's a lot. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting. It's like, I have a fear of having like a very, I don't do well with illness. Whenever I get sick, I like catastrophize pretty quickly. And so I have a fear of having like a protracted illness and not handling it well. But it, I guess, seems like from what little experience I have hearing about it, that it does sort of either force or provide for you having to kind of transcend the fear of it a little bit.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, we're not alone with that.
Yeah. I think what I love about that story was that it was, you were participating, and we'll use the phrase co-creating, that experience in reaction to your, to what you were going through and the environment around you and your spiritual understanding, and you played some beautiful music. It's like, I think that's what a lot of this spiritual stuff is pointing to, is like, if we aren't intentional with the things that we do, we're just going to be bouncing around with all of the experience that are so bad stuff seems like a nightmare, good stuff seems like the greatest thing in the world. But if you go in with a level of like intention, and especially if that intention is peace or transcendence, you can start to experience that within yourself, which is like a really good way to prepare for almost anything, I think.
Here's a pitch. There's an app like Duolingo, but instead of it being like, have you done your language learning today? It gives you a little push notification. That's like, have you thought about death?
Mm-hmm.
Think about death today.
Yeah. And if that is a fear that I'm like, I'm just headed towards an empty abyss where there's nothing but black for an eternity, like say that shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's good to like you're saying, talk about this stuff, but let's bring it to the forefront so we can address it. You know,
I would be remiss if I didn't say, don't go earlier than you need to, though. Also, if you're having a hard time, you know,
yes,
stay another day.
Absolutely. And I think if you are having a hard time, you know, I was raised in the Catholic tradition, and there are all these works that you're supposed to do. And one of them is visit the sick, and another is visit the dying. That might be the same thing. But yeah, I think for people who feel drawn to that, to ending it, maybe getting close to it by helping someone else or being present for someone else who is closer to it might be a way. It's like almost like homeopathy. you get a little taste of it. But or what you were saying, more, you get a more nuanced understanding of it. And then, of course, you know, you get a more nuanced understanding of your own existence and what it means to be alive. And hopefully to be able to think of it in some way as a gift. And one that's just going to be here for a minute. You know?
Yeah, and then I think it will be followed by some other gift that we're incapable from this vantage point of seeing what that is, much like the spiders and the satellite, you know?
I was going to say another book, but no spiders involved.
Well, then I don't want to hear about it.
Weirdly, it's titled, "This Book is All About Spiders."
Men, no spiders.
It's called Everything Matters, and the lead, the main character, has, and it's never defined in the story what or who the voices are, but basically that he has these voices that speak to him that have, they're not omnipotent, but they have the knowledge of, I mean, they're kind of omnipotent, but they basically tell him they're with him in the womb and all throughout his life. And they give him the knowledge that there is an asteroid that's headed for Earth that's going to hit at this time in this year on this day. And so he's born basically with the knowledge of knowing exactly when the Earth's going to end. And it kind of takes you through, I mean, it's like a family drama kind of also, but it takes you through his story being a person that is grappling with this idea of like, what's the point if I know exactly how it's going to end? And there's a moment when the voices are speaking to him, and the reason the book is called Everything Matters is because everything matters. So there is a moment where this is spoilers for the book if you want to read it. But he basically at some point gets the choice to like pick a timeline, and he chooses a timeline where the Earth is going to end, but he gets to be with the woman he loves. They end up getting pregnant accidentally. And now he has this kid, and he's like, fuck, I know that the Earth's going to end in like 7 years, and I have this kid now. And the voices basically are saying, like, it's, you know, it's sort of an old adage, but like, life isn't meaningful despite death. It's meaningful because of it. And so every piece of suffering and every experience, all of it, everything matters. Because there's a expiration date. And, I found that book really comforting and compelling, because it does, like we were talking about in terms of sort of Western ideology, it always feels like something should be pointed at a direction or pointed to an outcome or pointed to, it should mean something in a very specific way. You should experience it as a whatever, like everything has to have a certain meaning, growth, whatever associated with it. And the thing I liked about that book was that it really did sort of just suggest that like all those experiences are meaningful because they're occurring, not because they're leading you toward anything in particular or because they're going to get you to a certain place. It's just because you are human and you're having that experience, and thus it is meaningful.
Nice. I like it. I hardly missed the spiders.
I was kind of hoping when you said, I don't know, he ended up marrying a spider. I was like, there it is. That's it.
His child was a spider.
Ooh. Yeah. Spider baby.
Yeah, spider baby.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
Yeah, and to me, that is, you know, we apply narratives to things because that's how we understand this physical universe, and that's very, very important. And then, you know, there's also the Eckhart Tolle thing about, like, you can transcend your thoughts and transcend the narrative, which allows you to be extremely present and then you're no longer, it's a deeper kind of meaning that isn't related to like a sense of accomplishment or anything like that. It's like you're standing in awe of the beauty of the universe, which I think is what people love so much about psychedelics and transcendent experiences like that. And I think there's just a long tradition of people being able to have experiences similar to that. But we don't look at them because we think we're the smartest creatures who ever exist because we invented Netflix, you know? And like, and no, Netflix is cool. No, I'm not dissing.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, no doubt Tubi is
cool.
Yeah.
But I think there are other...
Big Tubi heads over here.
Yeah, there's all... And I get it. Like, people are accused of, you know... To me, I see modernity as like there's an aspect of loss around what we really... What being here actually is. And I think that there are a lot of older indigenous groups that had a better understanding of that. Now, those people would be accused of just thinking that life was perfection. And, you know, I'm sort of projecting some of my fantasy onto those people. But if you listen to them talk, if you listen to, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh talk or these people who are in these like lineages, they have a deep, beautiful understanding. And for me, I'm like, when I wanted to die, I really just wanted to feel differently. Like I didn't ever have chronic illness, but I definitely had chronic emotional and mental illness, you know?
Yeah.
And those experiences just made me want to feel different. That's the, and they say in recovery, they're like, yeah, if you kill yourself, you're killing the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that this is actually what I was experiencing was like incredible, profound loneliness. Mm-hmm. So like there, and that is different than a person who has a chronic illness, who perhaps a terminal illness, stuff like that. I think we should be able to, for sure, cut it the fuck off. I believe that's everyone's right.
Mm-hmm.
But also that's different than experiencing an illness that may have a cure that you just haven't discovered yet.
Yeah.
Yes. You know? A spiritual cure.
Yeah.
Or a combination of spiritual, physical.
Totally.
Medical.
Yeah, man.
I don't think we know all the ways, but.
For sure. Meds, meditation, exercise.
Absolutely.
It's all good, baby.
All that shit.
It's all good, baby.
Totally. And you never, that's the beauty of life, is like you continually have another opportunity to experience something different. We get into, depression does this really gnarly thing where it feels like nothing ever changes.
Yeah.
But the reality, the true reality is that is incorrect. Everything is always constantly changing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Reminds me of a joke from your special where you talked about loving blacking out. What was the phrasing of it? That like, it's like you get to be dead, but not for...
Oh, yeah. Because for real, that would always happen. I'd be like, I want to be dead, but not forever.
Yeah.
I want
just 12, a while.
Yeah, I want to...
12 hours of dead.
Yeah, 12 hours. I want to fucking hand the keys of my body over to the universe and be like, have at it. What weird shit.
That's brilliant.
You
know? Yeah.
I love that. I mean, it makes me emotional, honestly, that recovery saying, if you're killing yourself, you're killing the wrong person. Because I do think, yeah, I mean, and it's no shade on people that are suicidal or have killed themselves. Because I think probably everyone on this call, I'm guessing, I don't know as much for you, Maud, but has experienced a depth of pain that has definitely like...
Absolutely.
We've dabbled.
Yeah.
We've mused.
Totally.
You know?
Sure.
That's a
lot. What if we did just, you know, just a little cheeky, you know?
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye.
Which I also think is important. I mean, put it in the funeral. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, to have a day where be like, I cannot.
Right.
And just honor it. You know, my worst thing is, I mean, even with our kids, like, you know, when Finn was younger, our son, he went through this period where he would, I think a lot of like junior high boys, a lot of Gen Z talk about killing themselves a lot.
For yucks.
Just they like would say that, like, I'm gonna kill myself compulsively, that's the word. And I compulsively, as a mom, would say, don't say that, that you can't say that, that's... And then finally one day I was like, you know what? You can say that. Like, what am I doing? Because I realized that I was shutting down a real emotion that he was having, which kind of like you're saying more, was probably like, I need to kill some part of myself that's not working for me. There's something I need to kill. And it's like, let's honor that instead of just telling people, don't think about that. Don't say that. Like, why not? Let's talk about it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had to go very deep into this. Like the critical voice had to get so loud that for a very long time, I thought I deserved to be hurt. You know, the suicidal ideations and stuff, that's all a real kind, an extreme kind of violence, right? And so I needed to go to experience the depths of that, to have the pain of that, to then eventually start to realize, okay, for me personally, I have a part in this. It feels fucking awful. I hate suffering. How can I slowly, steadily, over time, through therapy, meditation, medication, recovery, all this other stuff, start to change the way I think about myself? Till now, I love myself very deeply, and I know for a fact that I don't deserve violence, and I never have suicidal thoughts at all anymore. And like, so I understand that I'm extremely fortunate in that way. But I very much needed to have those experiences.
Well, there's an adage that depression is a messenger.
Yeah.
That it's telling you something. That if you're chronically, yeah, that there's something it's pointing to.
Yeah.
A wound or a, yeah, some part of you that you need to kill or that needs to be transformed or that needs to,
yeah,
or needs space or needs
love,
nurturing or needs whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they say, it's in recovery, the gift of desperation. Sometimes dark nights of the soul can force you to hit a bottom that will make you adjust.
Totally.
In a way that maybe you've always needed to and then didn't have the sort of pain motivating you to do it.
Yeah. And that we experience cycles. Like I was talking about this recently, like everything is cyclical, right? And it doesn't feel like that because our calendar is set up to just go 1, 2, 3, 4 into perpetuity. When the reality is like we always have winter. We always have spring, right? So the acknowledgement that like this stuff is going to change on its own and that there are times of, that's what your book is about in a lot of ways, like the times of darkness and what we're talking about, the weird gifts that can bring, but like the, they're so, so, so strong and lasting, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at my most optimistic, which isn't all the time, isn't even really some of the time about this country, is that maybe this is, as you were kind of saying earlier, Maude, that the death of the empire needs to happen so that something better can grow in its place.
Or it is happening. It is going to happen.
I love that. I love that for us.
I mean, I don't mean to say that, but just like what Maude was saying, like that change is inevitable. And I guess what I'm saying is I would never want to say what needs to happen because I feel like I don't know.
Right, right.
But yes. Also yes. All signs point to.
We're also allowed to say what we think might be a good idea.
Yeah, that's
too,
true.
You know?
Sure.
But yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to have it just all work out.
Me too.
Have like get the best of everything. Like just transform without an absolute death. Like, could we just have a critical illness, lie still all night listening to music and come out transformed and do better?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You'd get more in touch.
Yeah.
I think have
an opening of our hearts that leads to a little bit more of like kindness and gentleness.
Maybe the funeral can be a way into that. You know, that can be. I also just had the thought that it would be funny too to do your makeup for your funeral, like you were embalmed and like someone had done your makeup for you.
Yes. Oh my God.
So you're like kind of pale and your eyeshadow sort of weird and it's like a color you'd never choose.
I went to an open casket wake a year ago and I live in the South and the woman had a really nice gel manicure because they can do manicures hella good down here. And it was blue. And I thought, wow. to take blue nails into your afterlife.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bold move.
Yeah.
It's a bold move.
Yeah.
Tapping them on the pearly gates.
Yeah. Right. It's a trendy move.
I
a classic.
It's not in here. What's that?
Yeah. It's not like. Right. So I would think a Revlon red, you know, you would see and you'd be like, oh, of course. Like, I'm very elegant for, you know, the next stage. We just kind of had like a Lily Pulitzer, you know, kind of fun times, which does make me wonder, you guys, is like the afterworld, which more you've kind of been talking about. But like, what do you guys, what do you want for that?
Me versus Patrick.
What do you hope?
Game of 101. Streetball. Not for eternity, but for like 100 years. And I'm really...
100 years?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, like, do you want to be a ghost for a minute? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I need to interrupt.
Yeah,
get into it, Mort.
No, no. What was the question?
It's your funeral. No, please keep talking about your...
I just play dirty. I'm all elbows and trash talk. I'm underestimated, you know. And look, it's Patrick Ewing. Is he going to win? Ultimately, yes. I don't even think in this fantasy I could beat Patrick Ewing. But, like, I give him a run for to the point that he, by the end, respects me.
But you're not trapped in a body. So you might. You might could. It's soul v soul.
Right. Well, I think there's a liminal space where I'm still playing by the body rules because I haven't fully transcended. So that's where the game of basketball goes.
Oh, nice.
And then at the very end, he shakes my hand and goes, nice work. And then I fly. I just steadily float off into the sky. And that's where I enter the true spirit world.
Nice. I like that. I think that's good.
And I dunk on my way up.
Well, of course. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. It's what propels you. It gives you the propulsion you need to, to shoot yourself into the spirit soup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
What about you, Ashley? What do you want to do?
Thai people really believe in ghosts and supernatural shit. So Thai people have, they're called Samprapum, which are spirit houses. That often they're shrines you can see outside of businesses. People leave offerings. Strangely, red Fanta. Did I do this again? Fanta.
Yeah.
Fanta. Red Fanta.
Was I talking about this exact thing in a different podcast?
I think you may have mentioned it, yeah.
Anyway, Thailand is like one of the biggest purchasers of red Fanta because people leave them at Samprapum so much because they have a really, you know, bright color. Yeah.
It's them and the... Wait, is Insane Clown Posse, is their thing Fanta also?
Is it?
They're into a very specific soda. I hope it's the Thai.
That's a great Venn diagram.
Yeah, I love that.
Completely.
So I find that interesting. That
no, sorry, it's Faygo. They like Faygo. Oh. Sorry, honey. That is the dumbest reason anyone has ever interrupted someone in the history of time. No, wait, no, it's Faygo. The soda those insane Faygo like is Faygo. Sorry.
Are you done? Can I continue?
Now, I've got some more insane clown facts. They call each other juggalos.
Well, that's an obvious one, honey.
Sure, yeah.
You got to pull out some deeper cuts.
No, the reality of Insane Clown Posse is that their last album, they revealed that they were Christian. And said that they were Christian the entire time. And that is...
The whole time?
The whole time, yeah.
The funniest...
It's incredible.
...move that any artist has ever produced.
Oh, yeah.
That they're like... Because they have songs like... Sorry, called like Dead Bitches Don't Say No and stuff. Yeah, as bad as it gets, right? Which is just as much about necrophilia. Ooh. Anyway, yeah. And so, that's why that, like...
Kind of on topic.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Nobody Knows Why Magnets Work, that song.
Yes.
That's about Christian... When, of course, people have a deep understanding of how magnets work.
Yeah, people know how magnets work.
Yeah. Easily. Although, look, maybe those insane clowns are pointing to the fact that there's a deeper reality that we claim to understand that is beyond the physical.
He's an ICP apologist. It's happened.
I'm a juggalo.
He's a juggalo! Oh no! I can't get out.
In the interruption.
But anyway, what I just sort of like the idea that the fuck was I saying? That Thai people have such, you know, I mean, it's similar, I suppose, in a way to an ofrenda. Although I think hilariously, Thai people also believe in like spirits fucking with you. So it's not necessarily like a good thing. It's like if you neglect your samprapum, it's not good. Like a bad spirit can come in. So it's not like, it's not to be taken lightly. It's not like grandma's just going to show up and give you a smooch on the forehead. It's like, no, you might let a bad ghost in and bad shit will happen. But I like the idea that there are gateways by which spirits can come in and pal around if they so choose. I like a ghost story. That kind of stuff interests me. I find it kind of exciting and kind of cool. I don't know that I would want to just be a ghost trapped myself.
Right.
But if you were able to like come in and out, you know?
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just come when called.
Yeah.
Or maybe occasionally for a while. I like that idea of 100 years. Or there's that idea that I think it's in Judaism that you are somewhat tethered to this world as long as there's someone on earth who remembers you. Mm. Maybe like actually met you. Maybe like not just, you know, Shakespeare or something, but actually knows you. I'm not sure about that. That seems to me like a good amount of time.
Like you are stuck because that one guy that you worked with at Radio Shack.
That's,
you
know, so funny.
Is still around.
Right.
You're like, I guess I have to like hang out with Greg because he's the only one left.
Yeah, yeah. He's
gone. People who know that tech guy who's consuming his own child. Sport.
Right. Are like, ugh.
That guy lives like not forever, but till 130. Just an annoying ass age.
Well, if that's true, think of how long ICP is going to be remembered. You know, they have so many dedicated fans.
Or actually, all this long into our relationship.
Actually, let's say you are a ghost for a little bit. I love the idea, you know, like now when you see ghosts, a lot of times people will be like, oh yeah, and they had like a long gown or a top hat. I love the idea that for the next 100, 200 years, people are going to be haunted by ghosts in like athleisure.
Right, wearing Crocs.
Well, that's right. The new generation's so fun because it's like pajama pants and like oversized sweaters and stuff.
Yeah.
So
very comfy ghost outfits.
Yeah, and like angsty and sad. Like they barely have the energy to haunt.
Yeah, oh, some ghost in a Garfield hoodie that says, I hate Mondays. Yeah.
But that's why we have to like,
an ironic
because we're so sensitive to fabrics. Oh my God.
Sorry.
No, I just would be, my worst fear, actually, I think I just figured it out. My only real fear of dying is that I would die in a really uncomfortable fabric.
Mm.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Like I want to die in a
for eternity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I want to die in a nice cotton.
Yeah. You don't want a bad polyester wool thing happening.
It'd also just be embarrassing. Like you show up and you're like, God, this fabric hasn't been. I'm sorry. This was terrible. This is made of petroleum. That was awful. I don't know what we were thinking then. That was a crazy time.
What would your funeral look? Be would you be in like silk pajamas?
Oh, that's a great. I'd probably do pretty much the same thing I did in a Day of the Dead parade in Missoula, Montana, which is that I worked in a costume shop, and I had this, like, basically it was some kind of priestly garment, just very big, and it was from like the 1880s. And it was kind of like, had all these layers of like silks and cottons and embroidery, but it looked like a ghost. Huh. So I put that on, and then I made a strand of potatoes on straws, like for a big potato necklace. And my thing was that I was honoring the our ancestors who died in the potato famine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was really great. I felt so comfortable. I was like, I could wear this every day from here on out.
That's a great.
So I think that's what I'd wear in my funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a huge compliment. I love outfits that feel like they were created by an 8-year-old. And I don't think that like enough of us use that kind of imagination. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To be like, yeah, I want to carve half a watermelon and wear it as a hat.
Mm-hmm.
That's my shit I'm rolling with today. You know?
Yeah, because I think on your funeral day, you should try to get to this, like, because your birthday is kind of all about, like, this is who I am in my body. But I do feel like your funeral day, your death day, could be like, this is what my soul is wearing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Yeah, right. Yep.
I dig that.
Because it's a big, you know, there's stuff that you think looks good, and then there's stuff that feels good. And to me, I like to try and, like, you know, split the difference if I can.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, honey? What's your death celebration? Clothes-wise or entertainment or what?
I do think it would be nice to hear people say nice stuff about me.
I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah. To be like,
absolutely.
Yeah, this is what I would miss about you if you were gone.
Yeah.
Or when you go. And then I think the other thing I would like to... I don't know. I've been thinking about death more. And I am liking, I mean, I am liking and finding more comfort in the unknown of it all, of the just not knowing. So a lack of decisiveness about the proceedings is sort of nice. Cody's snoring and it's very funny.
His tongue's out.
He doesn't usually do that. That's so funny.
He's doing what they call on the internet a blep.
He's doing a blep.
Yeah.
Aww. Oh my God. I love him so much. I want to amend my previous answer. I want to be about what I want to do after I die. I want to be wherever Cody is. That's what I want.
Sure.
I want wherever Cody goes. That's where I want to go.
I want to be riding Cody for a good portion of it.
Oh, you know? Both of you. I bet you could both. He's pretty big, right?
Yeah, we could fit him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in...
I'd like to fly next to Ashley while she's riding Cody. And then I'd like Ashley to fly next to me while I'm riding Cody. I think that'd be
That sounds great.
I mean, guys, use your imaginations. Don't you want to have like Talib Kweli do a set or something? You know, like let's make this a bouncy castle something.
We were just talking about what I was wearing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Ashley, I think people should tell you what they think of you.
It should be about how great you are and all the amazing shit that you did. Of course, that should be a huge section of it. And I also am realizing too that for funerals, I think that's actually there should be more of that, because that's nice for the spirit too. Like you're talking about how like we're tethered to earth. Mm-hmm. Just as we send people off to kind of remind them, like, hey, look, you did all this. Your presence is so wonderful. I think we're so hard on ourselves about like what we're doing that we don't acknowledge the fact that like just being here is a great gift to other people. In a lot of ways.
Yeah. I also realize that I think part of what I would like my funeral to be is death practice. Uh-huh. So I don't know exactly how I'm going to die, but like for each one, I'll try a different version, you know?
Oh, that's so great.
You know, let's do
that. I love that. Yeah.
This is the one where I'm freezing to death. Let's feel that out. Like, you know, and then just taking a nap.
Each one's like an adventure. We could make a little set that looks like the Arctic for you. You're with Cody, but he's got a little parka. He's got like an Eskimo parka on. You know? Yeah, we let you experience that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we see, you know, we'll kind of look outline like, how long does it take to freeze to death?
Yep.
And so then, you know, we time me and I'm kind of like, you know, I'll pretend to be cold and then I'll kind of fall asleep and I'll be like, okay, that's what that would feel like. Great.
Yeah.
I mean, some would be so unpleasant, but you know, you could just do them as a goof, like, oh, an axe murderer comes in and one of my friends dresses up as an axe murderer and axes me, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, and I fall over and then we have pizza.
Everyone's followed by pizza.
Absolutely. It's like a way more fun Shavasana.
For sure.
And it lasts all day.
And you love an escape room and you love doing silly sketches and stuff. It should reflect your life.
Okay, honey, I feel like you have a bunch of ideas about what you want yours to be.
Yeah, what do you want for your funeral? That's brilliant, Ashley. I think we should do that.
Thank you. Little death practice.
Yeah, we could maybe, if we craft it, it has a portion. Like, everybody talk about how sad they are that I'm gone portion. I guess that comes after the practicing a kind of death.
Uh-huh. That's how you start
portion.
The party. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you do the death practice?
Yeah.
Everyone talks about how much they miss you.
Yep.
And then you have ghost time.
Yes, they're so
sad.
Yes. Maybe the exact. And then ghost time. Yes, you have three parts. Yeah. But then there's a little moment where they wrap you up between, like, after you have death practice. I think you get to get, unless you're scared of being rolled up and stuff, but some kind of, you get to experience it. But, like, you're rolled up in something. Yeah, you're swaddled.
That sounds nice.
Maybe in kind of a dark place. And you're hearing everybody talking about it, but you don't have to engage.
Right.
That's the thing, is you don't have to be like, oh, that's nice, but sometimes I'm not really nice or something.
Yeah. In fact, I feel like you can't talk back. People just talk at you.
You're dead.
Yeah.
You're dead.
I also just like the idea of being swaddled. So
yeah, isn't that great?
Being swaddled, and then you have like the sort of blackout eye mask on, and all your friends sit around you and they compliment you and you can't say anything. You have to just receive them.
And again, I think not just compliment either. Talk about the depth of meaning that certain conversations with you have in their lives.
Right.
Like, get into it.
Right. Someone has to perform a eulogy. Mm-hmm. Like, it has to happen that way.
But it's a coolity. Mm-hmm.
A coolity.
It's a coolity. Yeah. Because it's your funeral.
Because it's a funeral.
Yeah.
And then I think ghost time, honey, what I imagine ghost time being is you put on your ghost outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is my dream actually as an introvert. Holy shit. Is that you walk around and no one can interact with you. So you get to just, you get to stand in different people's conversations and just, but no one interacts. You can't interact with anyone. No one can speak to you.
Pressure off.
Pressure off.
Yeah.
Ghost time.
Yeah. Ghost time. That's great.
Ghost time. And you can even do other things like play a little song. Cause you know, a lot of times ghosts communicate in funny ways. You could drop coins on people, whatever you want.
Totally. So trip somebody if they're being a jerk. Or I think also, I always like the idea of like finding people's car keys for them. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
we always attribute bad stuff to evil spirits, but we never attribute good stuff to like maybe our ancestors who are helping us out.
Oh, they're out here helping us.
Yeah, man.
Totally.
Oh yeah, I'm calling on those people all the time.
Yeah, I think it's good. They pulled Cody's tongue out just a little bit so we could be excited to see you. While he's
it's even further out now. It's so funny.
I want naked Ferris wheel.
What?
Yeah, you heard me. And I want John Mulaney to say that I was always funnier than he was.
Oh, so good.
God.
And I want I want Steve Martin and Martin Short to get on stage and say that I was my generation's them.
Yeah,
and then all the stuff that Ashley said. In addition to that, I want ghost.
Can we work that into how you die, or?
Oh yeah, maybe naked Ferris wheel is how you die.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh sure, that's part of it. Yeah. It's a fake beheading on top of a naked Ferris wheel.
Yeah, we'll paint like a watermelon that just goes like whoa and falls and splatters.
Everybody's naked, by the way. It's not just me.
You
have to get naked.
Yeah.
I'm an equal opportunity perv. I mean,
and what are you wearing?
What am
What's
I
your,
wearing?
Oh, naked. You're naked.
Well, just for that part, I'm naked. I also have, there's a couple of costume changes. There's a couple different sweaters that I really miss. So I need to get versions of those.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be wearing the houndstooth suit that Bob Dylan wore when he was going electric in the 60s. It's like this incredible tailored piece.
Sure.
I want that. Yeah, those are the big ones for me right now. But then also the soft comfies that I usually wear in the evening time. Some sweats. Like an ironic shirt that says, like, you know, what me worry or something like that.
Do you want to die in a Big Dogs?
Yeah, I want to die in a Big Dogs. And I want everybody to make fun of NFTs for like an hour.
That's great.
You know, I just want all the comedians I know to get together and talk about how what an embarrassing piece of shit trash the crypto coin world is.
I think I mostly want dancing.
That's nice.
Mm.
Any particular kind?
All the kinds.
From break to the jitterbug, ballet.
Yeah, maybe every year. A different kind.
Nice.
Kind of like a different death practice. And then the listening about me portion. Then the ghosting portion. And honestly, I do feel great about the potato famine outfit as kind of an eternal ghost look.
Sure. You
know, a real kind of a classy ghost.
Yeah.
But, and then I think for the portion after pizza.
Just real quick, Maude, you think the potato necklace is classy?
Classic and classic.
Wanted to clarify.
And so and sustainable. It's sustainable fashion.
Yes,
that's right. That's
it's the opposite of fast fashion, man. It breaks right down. That's right.
Yeah, it really does. I think that would help people a lot, you guys, actually. Something to look forward to every year.
Yeah.
Just a little morsel, a little death morsel.
Friendship and autonomy and creativity. That completely changed all of your connotations you have with death.
Yeah, and then I think if somebody really is feeling terrible, and I'm not minimizing this at all, but just in the world of this podcast, they could just call it in. Be like, I need to have my funeral.
Yeah.
Right. I'm in a hard spot.
I'm in a hard place. Can we do it? An emergency funeral.
Emergency funeral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it. And that could be sad too, because like, you know, just like all the different thoughts about death, you can have different feelings about it at different times. And I think that's the importance of having like a multi-year conversation about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the sadness is a huge, I think that's also the thing, is like, we don't, you know, I don't want to feel grief. So I think also culturally, like, we don't ever want to experience grief. So I think that, yeah, there is, of course, like, a sadness to it.
Yeah.
Maud, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, y'all, for having me.
Where can the people find you on social media, if they are so inclined, which they should be?
I have a fun Instagram called Clothesline Timeline, where I have a memoir that's associated with items of clothing. That's pretty fun. And if they want to get the book, Descent, Your Guide to the Underworld, which uses the language of myth to talk about going through anything terrible, they can find that at 3 spelled out planes, like airplanes, publishing.com.
Sweet. Amazing.
3 planes publishing.com. Yeah. Awesome. Beautiful.
Where can they find us?
You can find us at Rebrand the Podcast on Instagram. You can find us on Patreon if you're so inclined to join it. You don't gotta. We don't need the money. We much prefer to value you as listeners. But if you want to join our Discord, you automatically get to when you join the Patreon, and you get to suggest themes for the episodes. You get to talk it up with other fans of the show. We just did an episode that was suggested by a member. We also just did a Q&A that was a ton of fun for our Discord people. So that was a blast. People got to ask us all kinds of questions. It was a real cool hang. And you get ad-free episodes as well.
That's it. Hey, don't die if you don't need to.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't be too scared of it if you do.
That's right.
That's right. Bye,
bye
y'all.
Rebrand.
Ding.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.